The final concert of the classical series for the Spokane Symphony. It's an all-Russian program. Natasha Peremsky, no stranger to audiences around here, is in town. She's in our studio. She's at our piano. And she even is ready with some Rachmaninoff. She's playing Rachmaninoff this weekend. Here is one of the Rachmaninoff Etude Tableau, live in her studio, pianist Natasha Peremsky.
Thank you.
Live from our studio, Natasha Peremsky playing our piano, and she was playing the Rachmaninoff Etude Tableau, Opus 39. Thanks to Jim Tevenin for engineering and our good friend Natasha with us again. Make yourself comfortable, Natasha, wherever you would. Why don't you come over here? Wherever you would like to be. Yeah, make yourself comfortable. Set your coffee down, and we're just gonna get you reacquainted with all of your friends in Spokane and that you've known all these years. This is what, about your fourth performance trip to Spokane, give or take, something like that you've been around. Yeah. And so, welcome. Thanks,
Vern. It's nice to see you again.
It's great to see you again. It's great to hear you again. And, you know, we've just come out of the extraordinary experience for us, the listener, of a whole world that just happened in one little Rachmaninoff piece. And I know the pianist has to be somewhat thinking about what note to play next, but to what extent are you able to enjoy the world that you get to create in playing Rachmaninoff?
I think the extent is that sometimes you really connect with the emotions of a particular piece. You know, sometimes you're playing something that's so out of what you're experiencing in life, and you're just kind of like, I can't channel this at all, you know, right now. And sometimes you play music that's so cathartic. I mean, for me, everything by Rachmaninoff just feels really cathartic, because you have to think about the technical, technique of presenting that kind of emotion. You know, it's not just kind of like, I feel it and it comes out. It doesn't work that way, you know. Sorry. I mean, because I've taught a lot of master classes where I'm like, do you feel this? And they're like, totally. I'm like, I don't hear it. So there is a very technical element to actually producing an emotion at the instrument. But sometimes just the very production of it, you know, kind of stirs you up inside as well. But, so these pieces, they're two sets, Opus 33, Opus 39, and I think roughly 10 in each. And they're called etude tableaux, meaning they're not just etudes, technical challenges. They're also a little picture. So here, you know, I think, I don't think it's anything very literal. It's not like pictures at an exhibition, you know.
No, but still, it's a... Because mean, all of the changes that you went through in that 3-minute piece or 4-minute piece or whatever were a remarkable journey.
Yeah. I think that's one of my favorite etude tableaux, because it's I think it kind of ends so anticlimactically. It ends kind of like in total devastation, but with kind of like a ray of sunshine, I guess, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course the beauty is that it's even subtler than what any words can say.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Rachmaninoff, which is, and we'll get back to all the other stuff about the rest of you and being here and all that stuff. But let's just stay right on this. Is it inevitable? I'm going to ask a few cliched type questions. Is it inevitable that with a Russian background, you would be playing Rachmaninoff, would you, more than other pianists, or not?
I don't know. I guess you'd have to ask non-Russian pianists what they play all the time. But I would say that, yeah, I play a lot of Rachmaninoff, but, you know, I don't mind that. I don't care. I used to be like, I don't want to be stereotyped. I want to play Beethoven and Brahms all the time. And that's all good, but Rachmaninoff sells out. So, you know, he's a favorite. And, I think it's... I don't mind the cliche that it can be marketed as a Russian American pianist and come in and play a Russian concerto.
Sure. And then I'm trying to remember your background. How old were you when you left Russia?
I was 8 years old.
All your training has been in the West.
Most of it. Yeah, but even my training in the West was Russian based, meaning my musical training, because my parents sought out Russian teachers from the Russian school. I stayed with them largely, with the exception of playing for Earl Wilde a few times.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. But even he's kind of, you know, his virtuosity is very, you know, it's like Horowitzian. It's got a Russian flavor for sure.
Sure.
And then I had one German teacher didn't work out so well. No, but not because he was German, but because he just didn't work out. I also had Russian teachers who didn't work out so well. I actually had a lot of teachers who didn't work out so well, to be honest. I think Earl Wilde was the first person since my very first teacher in Russia. Earl Wilde was the first one who really kind of got my juices flowing and my creative juices, because before that was kind of like, you play like this or else. And I was like, I don't like that at all. So I kept battling my teachers always interpretationally. And Earl was the first person to say, you know, you can try this so many ways. There's so many ways you can do this. Let me play you like five ways you could play this phrase. And then you decide if it fits within like the bigger arch. And I remember walking away from those master classes thinking, the world is literally my oyster. I could do anything. This is crazy, you know.
Nice.
And then my teacher after that was Pavlina Dukovska at the Manus College of Music. And she was probably my, I'd say, you know, on par with my first teacher in Russia. She really helped me kind of chisel out my sound and, you know, make sure I was never banging. And she talked about voicing and, you know, all these kind of things.
Yeah, so, the important things.
Yeah, really the important things.
Yeah, nice. Matt and Tasha Peremsky, who's playing the Rachmaninoff First Piano Concerto with Spokane Symphony, and was that what you were playing this year? Was that their choice? Was it? Could you have at the drop of a hat been happy to play any of the four concertos? Not the drop of a hat, but
yeah, I know it's interesting you say the four concertos, because yeah, it's like I know the. I consider the Rhapsody a concerto as well. Mm. No one plays the fourth concerto, though. Mm. I know. I'm terrified one of these days someone's going to ask me to learn it for like a set or something.
And what's the terrifying part? Is that technically,
it's really
or
complicated.
Musical? Oh.
It's very complicated piece. Musically, it's complicated. I hear it's not the easiest thing to memorize, as usual with Rachmaninoff. Like, that is nothing new. It seems like it's so romantic, but once you get in there and you start trying to memorize it, it's like, oh my God, this is just a beehive of complication, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Except, you know, the first is actually probably his least, dare I say his least complex, just in the sense that it's so youthful. It is his first opus. It was a conservatory assignment. It was his graduation piece, and it's just so, it doesn't have that darkness that everything happened, all the darkness after the premiere of his first symphony and leaving Russia and not really being able to come back, and the nostalgia he felt, it just kind of permeates, that darkness permeates all of his music. I was asked for an interview for this concert to compare the first and the second. I said, literally can't be compared, you know? I mean, one is an innocent teenager full of love and romanticism, and the other is kind of a broken human being repairing himself.
Sounds like something we need right now. Really?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, a dose of youthful innocence, I suppose.
Yeah, Rachmaninoff First Concerto that Natasha is doing. Now let's kind of back up on your relationship with this town, because it's been a great run. Your first Zul Bailey originally brought you here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
I think originally Kevin Pekman-Bonnev brought me for Gonzaga. Yeah.
So you did that first, and then you came back to play with Zul on several occasions.
Yeah.
And played in the area. And so how does
And you've
that...
shared the stage with us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we've had plenty of... I've been there for every one of those. And it's been so much fun. And is that kind of a metaphor for how your life is, that you do concertos and chamber music and solo things? And talk about your professional range.
Yeah, it's pretty much a hodgepodge. I would say predominantly concertos and... then kind of equally recitals and chamber music, maybe sometimes in favor of chamber music. But, you know, when you walk out on stage with an orchestra, it's definitely chamber music. Mm-hmm. It's to say that you're just a soloist, you know, bulldozing through 80 people is, you know, doesn't really reflect what you end up doing with 80 people on stage. There are concertos that are sometimes you're really just part of a symphony, like mm-hmm. the Brahms concertos, Beethoven concertos. Mm-hmm. Okay, the Chopin concertos, you lead, absolutely, that is a piano sonata with some, mm-hmm. you know, rather, I think for string players, annoying obligatos, because they have to hold a note really quietly while the pianist shouts at them that they're too loud, which for me is my own personal revenge, because when they yell at me that I'm too loud in chamber music. So, yeah, and certainly in Rachmaninoff concertos, they differ. You know, the Rhapsody, you're definitely part of a larger whole. The second concerto is actually a very intimate chamber music experience because there are a lot of solos in the orchestra. The third, you, without question, you lead from the piano. It's very piano-driven. This one's kind of like Grieg almost, you know.
Yeah.
There are solo moments and you kind of echoes in the orchestra. It's a really beautiful piece, but yeah, I'd say chamber music. You just end up playing chamber music all the time, mm-hmm. unless
sure.
you're out on stage alone.
Sure. Well, one more thing about the Rachmaninoff first. It's kind of fun to play something that isn't so completely well known and let people say, "Oh, isn't that cool? Isn't it?"
Yeah, it is nice. I think that people will be surprised how much they're going to fall in love with it. Because I'm sure they probably come in thinking, no, there's only like the second and the third and that one variation in the, yeah. in the Rhapsody. But I think I remember first hearing this concerto about, I don't know, 15 years ago and thinking, oh my goodness, that second movement is so gorgeous. It is just breathtakingly beautiful, the intermezzo. And the melodies are just so lush and it's such a, you know, foreshadowing for... I mean, so he's already got his own voice. Sometimes it takes a while before composers find their voice. This is Opus mm-hmm. 1, and it's like, this is Rachmaninoff without question. And the exploration of jazz harmonies and kind of a jazz feel to some of the passages and some of the melodies.
What year was it written? Do you happen to know? Or we could make it up out based on...
You got me stumped. Do you have your phone?
On his age.
His age? Oh, he was 19.
He was 19, and
yeah,
so...
Yeah, 18 or 19.
Yes, and when was he born, more or less?
Okay, 73, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
1873, so plus 19. Mm-mm, too early to do that math.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so it
okay,
was...
Okay, wait, no, I can do this.
Yeah.
93, so 92... 1892.
Yeah, so yeah. So around there. So it was still in the 19th century that
yeah.
that he was writing that. One more postscript about Earl Wilde and the way he kind of opened you up. I assume that you've had reason to listen to his transcriptions of songs that he transcribed for
yeah.
piano solo. Because I've heard from people that it really works. That it works with the words and everything. Almost talk about that.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean that's Earl's genius. He's, you know, he comes from the kind of handful of pianists that were able to improvise, and I bet it was actually probably really hard for him to write down, you know, that stuff, because I think he just went out there and improvised it really beautifully, and it was probably different every night, and to commit to something on paper is probably really tough. But it just speaks to Earl's imagination, his connection to music, and his connection to he was such a vivacious human being, and with such a large arsenal in his virtuosity that he could basically do anything at the piano. Mm-hmm. But he also had the imagination, you know, that's really mm-hmm. important, because some people have this really massive technique and then they go out and it's all like, sounds the same, you know,
yeah.
it's accurate. Yeah. And you're like, I really don't care about that at all. Like, what a waste of time, you know?
Yeah. But you get to, Natasha Peremsky, my guest, you get to live in a world where you not only get to do that, but you must do that. Talk about maybe dreams or hopes or thoughts or plans or things that, you know, that you have coming up.
It's dreams and hopes and plans. It's such a funny thing to... you know, I feel like sometimes I'm a hamster in a wheel.
Yeah, of course.
It's hard to see perspective. You just kind of, you want more, and you want, you know, to work with the people you like working with more. And but as far as personal musical achievements, that's just so hard to put into words. You know, it's almost impossible because you just know when you played well and you know when you didn't play well, and you want to have, and then there are some things where you're like, I just don't think I have that figured out yet, and I'd like to figure it out. I don't know how to explain it.
You explain it really well because that is that wonderful living process.
Yeah, exactly. And so sometimes you kind of walk off stage and you think, yeah, I think I'm getting somewhere with that piece interpretationally. I think I am. And then the next day, just kind of, pardon my language, bitch slaps you because you have another concert. You're like, that was tanked. Yeah. You know, it's just two steps forward, one step back, things like that. And
Well, certainly in doing the extreme things that a concert musician has to do, you have to be that self-critical and that insight.
And if you're lucky, you're surrounded by people who actually call you out on stuff as well, people you trust. Mm-hmm. You know, like I recently actually performed for the first time. Oh my goodness, terrifying. Prokofiev's Second Piano Concerto with the Oregon Symphony.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And it was really kind of a terrifying first rehearsal for me because it's not a piece that plays itself. And it's a very complicated structure. But Carlos Kalmar, he gave me so many pointers, like stuff in my solo passages, you know, where he would say, why are you doing that rubato? And then I'd turn around and be like, why am I doing that rubato? You know, and, you know, things like that, that kind of give you perspective because you're also, I mean, in a piece like that, there are mountains of technical challenges, just massive mountains. And, you know, you kind of think you have them under control, but then you got to consider the interpretation largely. And it's so polyphonic, that piece. That it was so great that he was, and you know, I thought of the Andantino opening, I thought of it faster than he thought of it. And then when I heard the recording back, I thought, well, why would this be any faster? You know, so someone who gives you a completely different perspective, that your first maybe split second instinct might be to challenge them back. But then if you try it on, you might realize they really have something important to say. And that's where I think the growth is, when you commit to something that might make you uncomfortable, you know.
Yeah. Musical and personal honesty from Natasha Peremsky. Thank you. No, thank you for that. We know you to be that way. And so thank you for bringing that to us. So that is the concert. It's Saturday night at the final classics concert for the symphony, Saturday night at 8 and then Sunday afternoon at 3. Yes, Mother's Day. So bring your mother to a romantic all-Russian concert. And then also a masterclass tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. At the Fox, so
watch me make people cry. I'm just kidding.
or be that Earl Wilde that suddenly liberates them.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the opportunity.
Oh, he was tough in master classes, though.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he would have been. Yeah. Well, thank you a lot for coming in.
Of course, thank you, Vern.
Natasha Peremsky.